Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Some of the biggest news stories and political scandals in American history would never have happened without a whistleblower, someone who saw wrongdoing on their job in government and exposed it. And even today, that VA scandal, whistleblowers came forth and said there were faked records and secret lists and veterans were not getting the care they needed. Famous whistleblowers include Daniel Ellsberg, who leaked the Pentagon's secret history of the Vietnam War to the New York Times, Karen Silkwood, who reported safety issues at a nuclear facility and she died in a mysterious car crash, and A. Ernest Fitzgerald, an Air Force official during the Nixon administration. He blew the whistle on fraud at the Pentagon. He called out $400 hammers and $600 toilet seats. Now, new whistleblower protections have been given to public employees by the Congress and reaffirmed by the Supreme Court. But is it really enough? Call in with your thoughts. Have you ever been a whistleblower? Have you been tempted to be a whistleblower? Or if you got something to blow, give us a call right now. We want to hear from you. Do you think these people are heroes? The number is 210-614-8980. And we are joined by Tom Devine. He's the legal director for the Government Accountability Project. And C. Fred Alford, he is a professor of political philosophy at the University of Maryland and author of the book Whistleblowers, Broken Lives, and Organized Power. Tom Devine, what has changed? What's going on with Congress with power for giving protections to whistleblowers?
Well, there's been a legal revolution strengthening whistleblower rights since the millennium, and Congress basically has done its share. There's best practice rights for employees throughout the private sector, and we had a very ambitious makeover of the free speech rights for government employees. In December 2012, after a 13-year effort to get that overhaul. The last frontier for us in legal rights is for intelligence community employees. There, despite general congressional support, the House Intelligence Committee either forced a removal of rights for government workers in the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act for the civil service, or stripped out the ones that previously existed for contractors like Edward Snowden. All of that happened in 2012, and we think it was a big factor in sparking Mr. Snowden's leaks through the media. At least he said that it was a significant factor.
So, C. Fred Alford, professor of political science at University of Maryland, you've written a book about whistleblowers and talking about their broken lives and organized power. Are whistleblowers, is it every once in a while, or is it an everyday thing?
Well, it seems like it's becoming more common, but I'd say that the whistleblower is still a rare bird. And people see on the job, I think, almost, you know, all the time what happens to someone who speaks out. Not necessarily someone who speaks out about some sort of gross abuse and gets fired, but it's very hard to go against the group. It's very hard to even to speak out at a meeting. Sometimes I think that everything you need to know about whistleblowing you learned in grade school, that it's very, very hard to go against the group, and people think they're individuals. They talk about, you know, rugged individuality, but when it comes down to it, I think it's not just about legislation. I think there's something in all of us that we want to fit in, we want to belong, and it's very hard to say no. I'm a teacher. I talk to my students. I say, would you blow the whistle about this? Would you blow the whistle about that? And most of them say no. It's just not worth it.
Let's go to the phone lines. We got already a caller. The number is 210-614-8980. What do you think about whistleblowers? Would you blow the whistle if you saw something going on? David has called in. David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Okay, David, go ahead.
So, I don't know. Basically, the whole case with Edward Snowden was being brought up about whistleblowing. And, like, these are some people, especially in Edward Snowden's case, he sacrificed their livelihood. I mean, he had a family. He obviously had children. And the fact that he sacrificed all this and put himself out in the public and exposed all the documents and the surveillance of the NSA to the public really shows that it was obviously information that was worth knowing and worth exposing to the public. Otherwise, if it wasn't, he would have maybe just kept quiet and, like, just continued to live his life, you know? And now, like, with everything going on, like, he's obviously trying to seek asylum in different countries and stuff like that. And, like, it's just, I mean, exposing information like that just is really life-altering. Like, your life cannot be normal again, ever. Like, people will constantly be looking after you, and, like, you're constantly on the run, you know? So, obviously, like, you know, in certain cases, and especially in his case, whistleblowing was, in fact, something very patriotic, even though people do not agree with it.
Okay, David, I appreciate your calling in and letting us know about that. Edward Snowden, we've kind of have like a pre-Snowden mentality and a post-Snowden mentality, because everything that he's exposed really told us what the NSA is doing and the depth of their spying on Americans and people in foreign countries. Before, we only suspected that they were listening to phone calls and tapping our emails and doing those other things. But now we know for sure that they're doing it. So, but Edward Snowden, he's not really a hero. He's outside the country. He's being prosecuted. If he could be, he's not, someone who would inspire folks to blow the whistle, I don't think, Tom.
Well, David's insight was very well taken, that a person's life is never the same after blowing the whistle. It's a life's crossroads decision. And in some ways, people will be anti-inspired by what's happened to Mr. Snowden, who actually is one of our clients, is where nearly all the domestic surveillance whistleblowers. He's got a horrible future in terms of any conventional goals for people leading normal lives. But in other ways, he's very inspirational, because I think all of us have a gut instinct within us that's very deep to make a difference. The world will be a better place because of us. People are willing to risk their lives in war defending their principles. And Mr. Snowden has made a difference probably more than any other whistleblower since Daniel Ellsberg in exposing the depths of a huge reality that the government was lying to
us. What about Kelsey Manning with the WikiLeaks?
Mr. Manning's disclosures were much more sort of broad-based, just kind of a huge documents dump. He's just releasing everything that was being made secret. It included whistleblowing information, but I wouldn't call that a whistleblowing disclosure. Mr. Snowden said, here's a specific misconduct that I'm alleging, and here's the proof for it, and the government's lying to cover it up, and this is indefensible. The only reason it's continuing is because it's being kept secret. That's what he did, and it's had a tremendous educational impact, if nothing else, whilst the jury is out for how much it's going to change the law or government practices. But Americans finally know that Big Brother has moved into every electronic device in our lives. It's a regular part of
our family. There's all sorts of types of whistleblowers. We're going to talk about those. And there are whistleblowers who have gotten rich by blowing the whistle on some acts going on in the government. We'll talk about that as well. If you want to join the conversation, the number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. The federal government has been encouraging whistleblowers to come forward since the Civil War. Congress passed the False Claims Act back then to punish war profiteers. Under that law, whistleblowers were entitled to collect a percentage of the fraud that they would uncover. One of the biggest cases was American banker Bradley Birkenfield. He reported secret deposits by U.S. citizens and Swiss bank accounts, and in 2012, he collected over $100 million bounty. So when you blow the whistle, you can actually get rich doing that. Tom Devine is a legal director of the Government Accountability Project, and C. Fred Alford is the author of Whistleblowers, Broken Lives, and Organized Power. He's a professor of political philosophy at the University of Maryland. And we're talking about whistleblowers, heroes, or something else. We want to hear from you. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Let's get Sean on the line. Sean, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I apologize if this was addressed earlier. I joined the program late. But my question is with regard to maintenance of anonymity for potential whistleblowers. First off, is that something that there are legal precedents for? And secondly, does it change with regard to private or public entities and whether you're working for them or not? I'll take my answers off here. Thank you.
All right, Sean, thank you for that call. And so, Seyfried Alford, anonymity.
Well, yes, there have been various attempts, and there are actually sites and so forth that you can submit your information to that will scrub your try to scrub your personal identifying information clear and so forth. But I must say that when it's really something important, that having a face and a name attached to it really gives it credence. Conversely, if it's about something really important, it's going to be awfully difficult to remain anonymous.
Well, you can be anonymous for a time, working with, say, an attorney or with the Department of Justice, but eventually you're going to have to come out of the shadows.
And people are, if the sort of the more important it is, the higher level it is, the more it's about policy, the easier it's going to be for the organization to figure out who it is. I don't think anybody who's contemplating reporting something that's sort of wrongdoing by policy, which is where you really get into trouble, and thinks that they can do it anonymously, I think that's a really bad bet. And I hope another sort of legacy of Edward Snowden about whistleblowing that people take to heart is to be prepared before you blow the whistle. I talked to so many whistleblowers who really had no idea of the consequences. And one of the things that Edward Snowden did, and we can see this now, is he understood how seriously the government was going to come after him. And he was prepared. And I think that anyone who blows the whistle has to be prepared, whether it's national security or whether you're just working for a corporation or you're going to be reporting one of the most common cases of fraud, and that's Medicare fraud. You have to be prepared for retaliation, and you better have documentation. You better have some money in the bank. You better have a good marriage and so forth. You better be prepared.
The U.S. office.
I would second Fred's point with an exclamation point. In fact, that's why at Gap we put out a book called The Whistleblower Survival Guide, a handbook for committing the truth, because you'll be treated like you committed a crime. You need to take a course in surviving one of the most treacherous experiences of your professional life if you're going to blow the whistle. Every organization wants to eliminate a threat. And when you disclose indefensible abuses of power, you're putting a big professional X on your professional chest, at a minimum. But with respect to the point on anonymity, timing is the magic word. The longer that an individual remains anonymous, the longer that person can be privy to the flow of information and the evidence, which is it's essential, the prerequisite to proving their charges, to going beyond he said, she said. But Fred's also right that at a certain point, you're going to have to come out of the closet and bear witness and stand behind the evidence, unless it's one of those rare cases where a smoking gun is self-sufficient, which is extremely rare.
The U.S. Office of Special Counsel is now investigating reports that the Department of Veteran Affairs retaliated against 37 workers who came forward with allegations of wrongdoing at the VA. And so retaliation is a big issue when it comes to becoming a whistleblower.
Everyone retaliates. I mean, I know that sounds cynical, and it's probably not literally true. But in my experience, almost every organization, I'm not just talking about national security here, but almost every organization retaliates. There's something about groups, there's something about organized power that simply cannot stand someone who commits the truth, someone who goes outside, someone who shows that they remember that they're a citizen first and not just a member of the group, that loyalty to the group somehow, once you show that that's not your highest value,
well, which
the group,
group
will retaliate?
The group, which group? The group that you work with every day, or the
threat.
Entire society? Let me get Jerry on the line. I want to get. He called it Jerry. Welcome to The Source. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. I worked for the VA for 20 years, and I reported a lot of things from sleeping on the job to materials getting missing, for nurses taking it to their second job and overtime, and I was ostracized pretty good, and finally I got hurt on the job, and I was ostracized even worse, and I got really depressed and sent to a psychiatrist at the VA, and she told me, well, that's what you get for being a whistleblower, and I was eventually let go because I was told I couldn't do my full-time job with injury on the job, and I was essentially forced to retire.
Jerry, I'm sorry to hear that. But thanks for doing your work. Appreciate that, sir.
Gap, we've had a half a dozen whistleblower clients from the Department of Veterans Affairs who all suffered very ugly retaliation. And one of the worst pockets is actually in Texas at an Orwellianly named outfit called the Center for Excellence. Where the whistleblowers have been forced off the job for challenging diversion of funds, just complete neglect of the agency mission for personal agendas, stripped of their duties, forced out of the office. And although the Veterans Administration has said that they've learned their lesson and they're going to be respecting whistleblower rights, Fred's right, it doesn't change. There's one of my clients currently, a gentleman named Dr. David Tharp, is a 2-time Employee of the Year for the Air Force, who had to go to Afghanistan. He volunteered to Afghanistan to escape the harassment at the COE in Texas because it was so ugly. And he came back. They wouldn't let him have any of his duties back. And they won't even discuss resolving the case. And this is after all of the scandals have come out. Whistleblower retaliation is, I think it's even more than just an organization. It's an instinctual equivalent of a basic animal instinct, the organizational equivalent of that. When you're threatened, you want to destroy the threat. You want to eliminate whatever it is that's threatening you. It's beyond morals or right or wrong or anything else. And the whistleblowers at the VA, they've got the number of one of the most dysfunctional bureaucracies in the government. And half my clients have come from Texas because things are such a mess in that state. And they're threatened, and they're behaving like wounded rats rather than public servants who have made a mistake and are trying to learn their lesson.
Okay, I'm going to get another caller on the air. Lucy has called in. Lucy, you're on The Source. Go ahead.
Well, I do believe that the decision to blow the whistle should be very heavy. It should be something, and just as you spoke earlier, the bigger it is or the more policy level it is, the more weighty of a decision it should be. But first of all, I was a victim of someone making a false allegation. And so as a person who was reported by a whistleblower, it was horrible. I didn't even know it was coming. The ID's office called and said, hey, we're looking, we're just doing a review. We're looking at your paperwork from your trip to Florida. And so can we talk to you about it? So I said, sure, yeah, let's set up a call. Let me get it all organized. I have everything with me, all the copies. I mean, I was a sucker. So they called and she said, well, no, could you come in for a meeting? You know, I'd answered every word of her questions. I went into that meeting and I was under the spotlight.
Okay.
Anyways,
so you were, and so Lucy, appreciate you calling in. Let me get the reaction from our guest because we're really short on time here. Tom Devine, so being the victim of a whistleblower, what's that like?
Being the target of allegations is always a horrible experience. And whistleblowers are like every other branch of society, like all of those who exercise free speech. Some of us do it heroically. Some of us abuse our freedoms. We need to have them, but you can't take anything at face value. We sure don't at Gap, because credibility is essential for us to help the other whistleblowers.
Anyone and Gap stands for government. And GAP stands for Government Accountability Project. You help people blow the whistle if someone wants to come forward about maybe some environmental issues or something that they've seen at their work. They could go to you and maybe see if you'd be interested in taking their case.
Oh, and helping them get prepared if they are well taken, helping them get prepared like Fred was advising to do it right,
okay.
That's essential.
And our other guest is C. Fred Alford. He's the author of Whistleblowers, Broken Lives, and Organized Power. This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.